Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you, and we'll start out tonight with a little aside. You know, Diane and I celebrated our 57th wedding anniversary on Saturday.
Congratulations.
And we are privileged to have Diane with us in the studio tonight. So if you'd like to know the secret to a long and harmonious marriage, you can call Diane at 1-800-966-1039. No, just kidding. We are going to talk about the outdoors tonight. We're not going to talk about marriage. And if you'd like to be on our show, what's the number, Diane?
1-800-966-1039. Toll-free statewide number.
Now, what about turning their radio? Do they turn the radio up or down?
I have no earthly idea.
Turn your radio down.
Turn your radio down. Anyway, we have a good show lined up tonight. I'll introduce our guests in just a moment. First, the crew, the man behind the toggle switches, the man that with the controls week after week, the sweetheart of Grand Lake Stream. Take a bow. Drum roll. Norm Plourd.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome aboard.
And nice to have you here. Always
it's
nice
always
to have
fun.
You. In the op center in there. And again, our co-host tonight, Bob Lehman, is on playing hooky down at Grand Lake Stream, catching those big, fat, landlocked salmon there. And he is probably, I don't think he's listening in. He may be, I'm not sure.
Well, I don't think you'll be able to catch
him. No, probably not. No, I'm not sure. Yeah, anyway, so filling in for him tonight is my bride of 57 years, Diane. Welcome to Maine Outdoors.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Appreciate you standing in for Bob. Okay, our guest tonight, in this order, we're going to be talking first by phone to Erin Merrill. Erin is quite an accomplished outdoor woman, and she writes a column for the journal called Women in the Woods. And Erin recently bagged a 1,200-pound bull moose, and she's graciously agreed to join us for a few minutes and tell you a little bit about her great moose hunt. Then we have another fellow who had a very good luck in the moose woods. His first name is Cole. And I think he's a lobsterman, I'm not sure. But he'll be with us to tell about his moose hunt. Then at 7:30, we're going to hook up with the iconic Maine big buck hunter, none other than Hal Blood. And if you want to find out some of the secrets of hunting those big woods bucks, Hal's the guy to talk to. We encourage you to ask him any questions you may have. You might want to think about those and get them prepared ahead of time. Anyway, a little mini seminar on big buck hunting in Maine. I think you'll enjoy it. Right now, though, it is time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal, Diane's favorite outdoor publication. And we want to remind you, the October issue just hit the newsstands this week. You can tell which one it is because it has a ruffed grouse on the cover. And there's a great article in there, too, by Paul Fuller on some grouse hunting basics. You want to check that out? Some lot of other great stories in there as well. If you'd like to have a subscription to the journal, it's cheaper that way, you know, and you can have it mailed to your home, and you can call Alicia during the week at 732-4880, 732-4880. A couple of things here on Outdoor Digest. You know, the moose hunt is in full swing. The first week was this week, and last week, we had some pretty good reports of some really nice bulls being taken. And we're going to have a chance to talk with two of those successful hunters in a few minutes. Anyway, I want to remind you, if you're bird hunting in the moose woods, what do you have to do, Norm?
Got to wear some fluorescent orange.
Now, can it be one item? Do you have to have two items, like in the November firearm season?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not sure about that.
Not sure. Oh, well, that was a rhetorical question because I know the answer.
I suspected that.
Well, the answer is you can get away with just wearing one item. Yeah. Could be a hat. Could be a vest.
I suspected it was that, but I just didn't get there, give that for and mislead someone.
Anyway, you can get away with one article, but you have to have, even if you're bird hunting, if you're in the moose areas, in the moose zones of Maine, you've got to hunt with some blaze orange. Let's see. They're revamping the any deer permit system. If you were lucky enough to tune in, was it last week?
Last week, I believe.
We talked to Nathan Bieber.
Right.
And they're in the throes of redesigning the deer permit system, the any deer permit system. And I know a lot of sportsmen have a lot of strong opinions about that. If you do, this is a chance to weigh in, and you can contact the IF&W folks on their website, or you can call them up at in Augusta. But anyway, they welcome your input. I understand the Sportsmen's Alliance is sending out a survey of its membership. You may be getting it this week. They will be asking for your thoughts on this to give them some ideas on how they should proceed as this thing develops. They hope to have this thing finalized sometime in early spring and have it into the November deer season 2022. That would be next fall. Oh, gee, we've got elections coming up next fall, too, right?
We do.
Yeah. Wow, that'll be a busy time. Okay, I think with time, even though Bob's not here, we thought with Diane here, with all of us three fishermen here, we have some fishing report. Ready?
I'm the big boss bass.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
No,
this is my rock.
Yeah. And you thought I didn't have any sense of rhythm. What happened to you? Yes, we're off, Diane. Anyway, we do have a short fishing report, and because we're going to be busy tonight, a lot of guests, so we'll keep it fast. But anyway, Norm was down to Grand Lake Stream. I was down to Grand Lake Stream. Diane was down to Grand Lake Stream. And Norm, how'd you make out?
Did okay. Nothing great, but it was a good time. It was quiet. That was the big part for me. I mean, I wanted to get away. And
isn't it nice down there this time of year?
It's hard to beat this time of year down there. Yes, it really is. I mean, it's pretty.
It's not crowded. Beautiful foliage.
Yeah, it's not like springtime where it's like combat fishing.
Yeah. And, pretty peaceful.
It is very peaceful. I mean, on Thursday, we barely saw anybody. And for a Saturday, for the weekend, I mean, a handful of people showed up. It was pretty good.
You lost a pretty nice salmon, right?
I did. Broke out of the water, and for some weird reason, they snapped the leader right at the fly line. I mean, I've never seen or heard that before.
What kind of a lash up did you have, your leader to the line?
I don't know. I was using Bob's rod.
Bob's rod.
It was an Orvis rod. I mean, I really was happy with it.
Okay.
Bob suspects that the fish probably landed pretty hard on the line and snapped it.
But, and you know, I caught one salmon, just one, the whole 2 days I was there. And it was robust. I mean, it had big shoulders.
Nice fish this time of year.
Oh, so fat and sassy,
As far as fish goes, I'd rather fish this time of the year for them at Grand Lake Stream.
Oh, they're spectacular. Yeah. And what fly did you have on when you lost that lunker?
That was, what was I using on that one? Might have been a white, actually it was a Barnsey.
Barnsey.
It was a Barnsey. Yeah. Barnes special. Yeah.
Caught mine on a Golden Retriever. Golden Retriever. And how'd you do, Diane?
Well, with the help of my son, he hooked it, a nice one, and I took the rod and brought it in.
Yeah, you did. Did a nice job.
But I learned a lot about roll casting trying to fish when the water's too high. But I had a wonderful time.
Yeah. The water was ungodly high, folks. It was like 800 feet per minute,
just shy of 800 CFS.
It was brutal. And I waited a little bit in one spot, but I didn't like the feeling of it.
For short people like me, you lose a lot of fishing opportunities. Either that or you get washed downstream.
Right, Anyway, but it's still a beautiful time of year. We drove some roads. We did some heater hunting for birds, but with no luck. But it's just nice to be out in the woods, and the foliage is just beginning to peak a little bit.
Give it another week, and it'll be
something
else. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, it's a great place to be. Anyway, that wraps up our fishing report, brought to you by the Northwoods Sporting Journal. And we have, again, our guest tonight. If you joined us late, Erin Merrill is going to tell about her big bull she bagged, which weighed 1,200 pounds plus, I think. Another fellow, Cole, also had a nice bull. And then at 7:30, we'll hook up with big buck hunter Hal Blood, who's going to give you some tips on how to hunt those big woods bucks. And right now, I think we're going to go to the trivia question. And this is good for a subscription to the journal. You know, the first of the month, the first Sunday of the month, we give away a subscription to the journal worth about $30. And if you know the answer to Diane's question, we will award you a one-year subscription at no charge to the Northwood Sporting Journal. You
okay,
have the question,
the
Diane.
The question is, what is the primary cause of the fall foliage change?
All right, 1-800-966-1039. If you think you have the answer, give us a call.
Next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors. V. Paul, your host. My co-host acting tonight is my wife, Diane, of 57 years. And she's going to be a judge of the veracity of the answer of your question. We want you to tell us what's the primary cause of the fall foliage change in the state of Maine. Caller, good evening. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Yes, I'm going to say shorter days and colder weather.
Shorter days. Okay.
Colder weather.
All right, we'll have to check with Judge Diane.
Is that the right answer? Well, shorter days, less sunlight, yes.
You accept that answer?
Of course.
Okay. Yeah, the congratulations. That is the right answer. The one we have written on our little script here is less sunlight, a process called photosynthesis. Of course, shorter days, really, is what you're talking about,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's your name, caller?
Wynn Cole.
Wynn. Okay, congratulations, Wynn. You have won a subscription to the journal.
All right.
Okay, that's
I've
great.
I've been fighting this for 2 years.
You've been waiting for 2 years?
Yeah, trying to win this.
Oh, no kidding.
Congratulations.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you finally made the grade. Good for you.
Right.
Yeah. Anything else on your mind tonight, Wynn?
I don't understand the biologist last weekend on your show about the doping. I think they just want to kill all of our does off. I don't see no rhyme or reason to let so many dopamines out.
Yeah. Well,
I just understand that.
Yeah, you understand the problem, though, right?
No, I don't. I don't understand. There's too many does, and I don't think that.
Yeah.
So maybe in some zones, I'll agree in the cities or something, but not in the area that I live in.
Yeah.
There isn't.
Well, the problem is they have a formula, and the formula has been kind of put out of whack by the fact that so many deer hunters get a doe permit, then hold out for a buck, and they need 10 permits to be issued to have one doe taken. So it's a problem for them, and that's why they're rethinking the whole process. Anyway, nice to have you on board, Wynn. And if you would stay on the line, Norm will get your address, and we'll make sure you get a subscription.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. All right, that was the correct answer. Okay, and there are a number of other factors involved. I was reading about it. You know, if you have a wet spring, you're apt to have a very bright foliage fall. Did you know that, Diane? A wet spring.
I did not know
that. Yeah, a lot of factors. But again, length of day is the key. And we'll dispense with that. I think we have Aaron online. Are you there, Aaron?
I am.
Well, good evening to you.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
I am well. How are you guys?
We're great. Nice to have you with us. And as I told our listeners, you write a column for the journal, which we're proud to say, called Women in the Woods.
Yes.
And you are indeed a woman in the woods, particularly with your with your latest success. Wow, that is quite a bull you bagged.
Right?
How much did it weigh?
It was 986 pounds dressed.
Dressed. And so with live weight, we're estimating, what, 1,100 pounds or so?
I think so, yeah.
Wow. Oh, is that your first moose?
It is.
Wow. And have you ever had a permit before?
Never.
Never. That's quite an honor to have that happen.
I know.
What a thrill.
I had 21 points going into this year's drawing.
Wow, good for you.
21.
Yeah, that helped to get the points, yeah. And you hunted with your dad, I guess, huh?
Yep, my dad was my sub.
Yeah.
And we actually hunted with Wayne Bernier from Allagash Adventures.
Oh, great.
And it was fantastic.
What zone were you in?
We were in zone 2.
Zone 2, okay.
That was where mine was.
Yeah. Well, tell us, just give us a quick retell of the story, how it happened.
It was a long week. It was an interesting. I've never gone on a hunt the way that we plan to be out for the week.
Yeah.
And so packing everything up for every condition. I think it rained or was misty every single day.
Okay.
The sun might have come out at one point, but at some point in the day it was cloudy and overcast. And
yeah.
One day we just stood out in the rain. but Wayne was determined. You know, he knew that we were going to make it happen, and he was determined to make it happen.
Yeah.
I calculated that we traveled a little bit over 700 miles. And I hiked 20 miles.
Oh, wow.
We put in a really good effort.
Yeah. Well, it always makes it more satisfying if you have to work for it like that, though, don't you think?
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was pretty emotional.
Yeah.
Come Saturday morning when Wayne yelled that there was a bull, and Dad and I got out of the car, and we just, we started shooting, and then going up onto the animal and seeing it.
Yeah.
It was, all three of us were pretty emotional about it.
So you got your bull on the last day of the hunt?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's pushing it, huh?
Down to the wire.
Yeah, yep. We've had that happen, too. That's great. Well, congratulations to you. What were you using for a firearm?
I shoot a 30-06.
Okay.
It's a Savage 110.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good round to use, yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah. It was a 206-yard shot.
Yeah.
So
Wow.
It wasn't too bad.
Yeah. Now, I probably shouldn't ask you this question, but I'm going to anyway. Mm.
Yeah.
Did you get involved in field dressing that critter?
Because I hired Wayne, I let him do it.
He might as well earn his money, right?
Yes, sir.
he more than earned his money.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and he had a couple of guides, Pat and Ernie, that were in the area. And so they came and helped.
Yeah.
And
that's good.
Yeah.
It was the slickest operation, watching them get that moose out of there.
Oh, yeah.
It was no time. They had some rope and boom. Wayne jokes that he's a legend, and after this hunt, I absolutely believe it. So it was great. It was a fantastic hunt. I'm going to write about it for the journal. I'll write about it on my blog.
Oh, good.
There's pictures up right now on my Facebook page. So it's
great.
And on the Allagash Adventures page.
All right. Make sure we get a picture. Make sure we get a photo with your story in the journal, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, great.
Absolutely.
Well, you're going to have a freezer that's going to be overflowing with some great wild meat. I envy you. The moose meat's my favorite, Aaron. I don't know about you, but it's my very favorite. It's great.
I don't, because a lot of us don't put in for a moose permit, I don't remember the last time I've actually had moose meat.
Oh, it's the best.
But I trapped my bear this fall.
Yeah.
And so, I got bear meat, I got moose meat, I'm going for my turkey and my deer. Hopefully I'll have a grand slam.
Yeah, well, good for you.
November.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've really grown. I've watched you grow as an outdoor woman with your successes in the field, and you have really done a great job, and congratulations to you.
Thank you so much.
Right. And nice to talk with you, and we'll look forward to reading about your adventure in the journal.
Perfect. That sounds good.
Okay, Aaron, take care.
Thanks, too.
Thank you. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, that was Erin Merrill, who writes Women in the Woods, and she certainly was a woman in the woods this past week with her 1,200-pound bull moose. We have another moose hunter whose last name I do not know. He was recommended to me by an acquaintance. His name is Cole. I think he's a lobsterman, and we're going to endeavor to get him on the phone and tell his story here for a couple minutes, and then we'll hook up at 7:30 with buck hunter Hal Blood. So that's quite a story, Diane, huh?
I should say.
Yeah, isn't that exciting?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got a bull once in your life, right? I mean, a cow.
A cow.
And how much did that weigh?
I think it was 800.
800 pounds,
yeah.
That was good eating, too, wasn't it?
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah. We have Mr. Cole standing by. Good evening, Cole. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Did I pronounce your name right? It's Cole, right?
Yeah, it's Cole.
What's your last name, Cole?
It's Shaw.
Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Cole. Nice to have you on board. I have never met you before, but I heard from the grapevine that you got a pretty nice bull. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, sure. Do you want to hear about the story of how we got it?
Sure.
Mm.
Okay. So we were hunting up in Sinclair, Maine, Zone 3, Monday and Tuesday, and we'd we'd heard through local knowledge that there were some good bulls, or there have been in some path in the past down this road, and we'd been hunting in this clear cut. We saw some pretty good bull sign, and we kept on going back, and we were calling in something. We thought we kept on hearing some grunts and some scrapes, but nothing ever came out. Tuesday night, we actually had a little calf come in, and it was screaming and all this stuff, and we thought that maybe the cow was there, so that was a good sign. And then it was looking pretty good for Wednesday morning. We were a little defeated because we hadn't really seen anything yet, and it was getting kind of the week was getting kind of progressing on. And so we were pretty excited though, because Wednesday morning it was going to be like 34 degrees, no wind. It was going to be pretty nice. So we set out Wednesday morning. We parked the truck. We were out there at like 5 a.m. We parked the truck. We were walking in. We didn't get more than, I'd say, 50 yards from the truck before we started hearing crashing coming through the brush. And we were like, we all paused. And then we, sure enough, we were hearing some grunting, and we were hearing paddles scrape across the brush.
Oh, boy.
And, yep. And then we all ducked down. We sat there. There are four of us. We sat down on the ground in this old skidder track coming out of this clear cut, and sure enough, this bull came right out into the track, staring us right down, and he didn't stop coming until he got within about 20 yards of me. And he was mad. He was grunting. He was stomping the ground. You could tell that he was in rut for sure.
Not too happy with you guys.
No, he was not.
Was he coming to a call?
Nope, no calls at this point.
Yeah.
So just us walking in, trying to be quiet.
Yeah. All right. So you dropped him there, huh?
Well, so what happened, this is still at like 5:10 in the morning.
Yeah. Right.
So we're still 50 minutes from legal.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how'd you handle
that? Got crazy.
How'd you handle that?
So we just ducked down. This bull was angry. We just sat there, knelt on the ground, 34 degrees. And this guy was just—he was going off and kept going. And then we were just sitting, and he started doing his own thing, just about 40 yards away from us down the skidder trail. So he's just—he'd pound the ground, and then he'd get wallow in his scent a little bit, and then he'd get back up, look at us, run a few times, and then at about 5:45, we hear another moose coming up, and here comes the cow.
Wow.
And so she comes in, and they greet it and everything. And then up comes the calf. And this is all happening at about 40 yards from us. So 15 minutes of six, this is happening. And then closer to six, I look back at my brother, and I see more light coming in. And I'm like, time to legal. And he's like, 10 minutes. And then I'm like, time. He's like, 5 minutes. And then I hear him say, legal, whisper legal. And then my other buddy goes, now. I stood up. I put my gun to my shoulder, and I pulled the trigger, dropped him right there.
Oh, great. That's a great story. Hey, I hate to tell you this, but your story's been wonderful, and we appreciate it, but we're up against the clock here for a commercial break. Cole, that's a great story. How much your bull weigh?
It weighed 630.
Right. Oh, that'll be great eating. Yeah.
Yeah. Could be.
Well, good for you. That's a great story. Congratulations to you, Cole. We appreciate you taking time to share it with us.
Thank you very much.
All right. And enjoy the moose meat.
Great. I will. I hope you have a good night.
All right. You too, sir. Thank you. Okay. Thanks. We'll take a short break, and then we'll hook up with Hal Blood. You stay with us here on Maine Outdoors.
Next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and we're proud to say that we have Hal Blood on the line. Are you there, sir?
I'm here.
Hi, Hal. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great.
Good. Great to have you on board. I know you didn't have a chance to hear our interview with that successful moose hunter, did you?
No.
Guy told a great story about how he was waiting. This moose came out 10 to 15 minutes before legal shooting, and it was like 20 yards from him, and stomping around, wallowing in the ground, so forth. He had to wait out the clock before he could shoot the moose.
He did.
Great story.
We've had that happen before, but no, I don't get we don't get radio in this neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah.
Get up over the overlook.
Oh, yeah. You're up in the boonies there. Anyway, it's
we get Canadian stations.
There you go. Nice to have you aboard. And normally we tell everybody who you are, but you're such a famous buck hunter in Maine. I think everybody knows who Hal Blood is. Anyway, it's nice to have you here, Hal. What have you been up to these days?
Well, these last few days have been moose hunting the last week. And just got back from that today.
Yeah, how'd it go?
Good, yeah. Killed some nice bulls. I'm kind of tiptoeing into it a little bit now since I thought I was retired, but I guess I'm not. So. But
hey,
you're not
old enough to retire, Hal.
No, I'm never going to retire.
No, me neither.
I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I had guided. Well, kind of a famous film producer there. He had bought an outfitter's tag from a friend of mine that owns Penobscot Lake Lodge. And so I guided him on that hunt, and his name's Donnie Vincent. So anyways, a lot of people know him, too. He does fabulous film production and story. Yeah. So, shot a nice bull, a 53-inch old bull. The bases were so big they had to stretch the tag for the Leatherman to get it around the base of his antlers.
Oh, wow. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had two successful moose hunters on before we hooked up with you, and they both had great stories. One of them is a gal that writes for us, writes a column called Women in the Woods in the Journal, Erin Merrill. I don't know if you know Erin. And that was her first moose, and 1,200 pounds, I think, before it was dressed.
Yeah.
Pretty. That's a good question. Somebody asked me the question. Do you know roughly, if you bag a moose and you dress it, do you know roughly what the paunch would have weighed? Like, is there a percentage?
It probably is if you ask the biologist, but I know them that. On a good moose, that gut pile is 200 pounds.
Yeah, I had a feeling that might be on a 1,000-pound bull. Yeah. Anyway, she's some excited, and she has her freezer full of deer meat and bear meat. Now she's got probably got 600 pounds of moose meat. So she's in good shape for the winter, I would say. Yeah.
I would think so. Yeah.
Hal, you've written, how many books have you written about big buck hunting?
Well, I've written four. I wrote a first and a second edition, and then I wrote that was like teaching books, and a lot of it with experience with guiding and stuff and hunting myself. And then I wrote another book that's 25 of my own stories of hunts called Track and Whitetail Bucks, and that's basically a storybook.
Which one was the bestseller, the most seller?
I don't know, really. No. I think probably still the original one was, because I've got no way to gauge it, but I know we sold 10,000 copies in 6 months of that one.
Is that the one I have called Hunting Big Woods Bucks?
Yeah.
That's the one, right? Yeah.
That's the first one, and then I did a volume two, all new stuff in that. I mean, the same technique stuff, but new stories. Mm. And then what I did, I think it was a year before last, I combined, because we were out of both of them. They were all sold out, so we combined it, and I made like an updated version, you know, like of a combination of the two, so everybody could get it all in one book. Mm-hmm. And I like to it's a full color one. The first two weren't. That was the publisher, not me. But anyway, so we've self-published it, and it's all full color, which makes the pictures, especially of the sign and all that, stand out. And it's a large size paperback, like a, I don't know what they call it,
coffee table book, I think they call them, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Hey,
both of those books are that style with the color.
One of the things I'd like to do, if you don't mind, and I know that if you guide somebody, you guide them, but you also teach them, right?
Yeah.
And
I always have, yeah.
Yeah. And can you just get down to some basics? There are folks who have never heard you on this radio program before. It's been a while since we've had you on. What are some of the basics you teach somebody who is a novice deer hunter? Could you kind of give a little review of that, some tactics and techniques that you would suggest?
Well, a lot of times the first thing I have to do depends where they're from, because and usually the people I'm guiding are not familiar. They've never hunted in the big woods, what I call the big woods in northern Maine and all that. And the first thing I tell them is, whatever you know about deer hunting, forget it, because we're going to start over, because this is a different animal. And sometimes people think that's kind of a joke, but it really isn't. Because if you have in your mind that you're going to hunt these deer like you hunt down in southern central Maine or anywhere else in the country, you're not going to do very well, because you're not going to pattern them. You're not going to do any of all the things you read about. That just keeps getting regurgitated back around about feeding and bedding and intercepting them and, you know, times of the day. Just forget it all. It just doesn't pertain. So, and the people that won't do that, they're never successful. And then they end up, they don't like it here because it's too hard for them.
Go ahead.
That's really the basic thing. And I mean, it seems kind of bold, but it's really true, because if you can't learn unless you're willing to learn, you know,
right?
And but you know, I mean, I guess the biggest thing they have to learn, they do, is that you're going to cover some ground. You're not hunting in a 40 acre woodlot, you know,
right?
And so that's it.
So covering ground, if you're in the big woods, is a big part of that, right?
That's what
he does. Yeah, I put on normally, I mean, it depends on the day, but I mean, for me, a 10-mile day is just an average day, you know.
Boy, that's a
some
lot.
Some days it might be 8, and some days it's more. Mm-hmm. It just depends what's going on, you know.
I know that your favorite would be hunting, you know, in the snow, tracking. But if there's no snow on the ground, you're still interested in hunting, right?
Yeah, of course I am.
Do you still hunt by definition? Is that what you do? Would you ever sit in a tree? Would you ever sit in a stand?
No, I can't do it.
You don't have the patience for that, right?
No, I don't have any patience for it. If I sit down. I sit down long enough to eat my sandwich on a log somewhere, and then I got to get up and see what's over the next hill, because I'm not, even if it's the best sign around, I can't bring myself to sit. I got to keep exploring. So
you like to move.
That's just that's my nature, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that's part of the secret to your success, if I could use that word?
Yeah, of course it's part of it, you know, because other people have great success sitting in the big woods too. It's really a good tactic, but if to sit in the big woods, you got to know where to sit.
I mean,
you can't. When I teach people, I teach my deer clinics in the spring, and it's the idea is that people can come with me in the woods and see what I do without deer hunting with me. You know what I mean? And what I teach them is you have to put yourself in the woods where a buck is most likely to be traveling or bedding, but usually it's traveling is what I would say. And the key to that is, I've written about it, it's about the signpost rubs, because if signpost rubs, is really, I call it the key to unlocking the big woods.
Hmm.
And that's really the easiest way to explain it. And I've got a saying, and I teach people, you want to spend 90% of your time, well, let me back up a minute. If a buck, any given buck, pick a number, say his territory is 10 square miles, pick a number, whatever. He only really uses 10% of that territory. There's going to be 90% of it he really ever gets through. Where he moves through his territory throughout the year, you know, I mean, other than probably the winter when if they hunker down somewhere, but
yep.
In about 10% of that. So you have to find out where yes. that 10% is.
Mm-hmm.
And most people want to hunt in the 90%. The 90% of the area where you're not going to see a buck. That's where most people hunt, to tell you the truth. Because when I show this to people and take them in the woods, they're like, no kidding. That's where I've been hunting all the time. And they're not successful. And now they can see why. Because I show them where the 10% is. Mm-hmm. We physically go there and I show them how to find the 10%.
Yeah,
is the signpost and all of that stuff.
So, and you find that 10% by a signpost, scrapes, anything else? Tracks, droppings? What? How do you find that 10%?
No, tracks, well, I mean, you might see the tracks dropping. Usually when you see a lot of droppings in the woods, that's where the does are mm-hmm. feeding around, yep. young deer and stuff.
But yep.
No, it's really the bucks travel the lay of the land. They like, you know, the lay of the land, meaning, you know, the ridges and gullies and, you know, they naturally travel the path of least resistance, mm-hmm. I call it. I mean, yep. they don't want to go up over a cliff and down the other side. Yep. They go around the ridges. They go through saddles.
Yeah.
And they don't want to go through real thick stuff where they got to fight their way through it and there's a lot of blowdown. That's just not normally where they travel. Yeah. So the easiest way to even get started is they like the edge cover where the green growth meets the hardwoods in that edge.
Okay.
They'll follow in that edge. Most people want to go sit in an open hardwood ridge where they can see 100 yards.
Right.
Well, good luck, because, I mean, not to say a buck will never go through there, but it's so random. It's just like throwing the dice if you're ever going to see one.
So
there.
You mean all this time I've been sitting on that Beechwood Ridge is a waste of time?
Well, I don't know. Has it been?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, not entirely, but mostly. Well, so where would you go? Where do you go if you don't go on the Beechwood Ridge?
Edge of the hardwoods and the fields.
Yeah.
And that's where you...
Well, you don't...
That's where you're going to end up finding your signposts is in those... areas they travel. You're not going to find one where they don't travel, right?
Right.
So if you find a signpost rub, which is a rub that's made on the same tree year after year after year by one and two, three.
Yeah.
I've got cameras. I put on a few of them, and there might be $5 coming to the same one.
Oh, I didn't
Wouldn't
realize
you think
that.
It might
yeah.
be a, might be a better place to sit.
Yeah, is a if you find one really well used signpost, is that enough to satisfy you to hang around?
Well, I'll still hunt through it.
Yep.
You know, if there's no snow, that's what I do. I still hunt down those corridors, and if I know there's five or six signposts in this whole big huge piece of woods, I just still hunt from one to the next.
Oh, I see.
If I'm in the corridors where they travel, and I go to the signpost where they travel to, I'm keeping myself in the 10%, right?
Yep.
Yep. Okay. And then that's when I travel, I'll slow down. If I'm going across the hardwood ridge, I'm just walking along to get through it. I'm not spending any time. I'm spending 10% of my time out there, and I don't even have the time. I mean, I look up ahead, but I don't expect to see nothing, so I don't spend too much time doing it. You know.
Yeah. Hey, Hal, we got to take a short commercial break. Do you mind hanging on? It just take us 30 seconds. If you have a question, go ahead, Hal. I'm sorry.
You got to pay the bill.
You bet. Okay. And if you have a question for Hal, what's the number, Diane? If somebody wants to call in, ask Hal a question.
1-800-966-1039.
And we encourage you to call in if you have a question for Hal. Just want to remind you again briefly that this program is sponsored and has been for many years in part by General Appliance in Brewer. They're your non-electric connection, the place to go for all of your appliance needs, whether you're talking new or used, ranges, refrigerators, what have you. They have a complete line of both new and used appliances, and they're great folks to do business with. The man to talk to is Al Elkin. He's the CEO over there, and he knows his stuff. He's been in the business for many, many years. You simply drive across the Bangor Brewer Bridge. That's the is that the Joshua Chamberlain Bridge?
No.
Oh, that's the other one, the old bridge. Drive across the old bridge, take a right and a left, and you're right in there. He owns half that block. General Appliance and Brewer, the place to go for all appliance needs. They also have a complete line of compost toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
And we encourage you to check those out. No septic systems, no leach fields, no mosquitoes, right?
That's what Bob says, no mosquitoes. Okay. He must be talking from experience, too.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, check them out. We urge you to patronize them as we do. General Appliance in Brewer. Are you still there, Hal?
I'm still here.
Great. Another question I wanted to put to you. I like still hunting, too. It's the way I usually hunt. Occasionally, I'll sit in the stand for a while. But there's a style that you obviously have to still hunt. And maybe it's a silly question, but can you kind of describe how you go? Let's say you get in that 10% honey hole that you've nailed down. You decided there's some deer in here, and I'm going to hunt them. How do you still hunt, Hal?
Well, I just move slower. I mean, like I said, I got to cover some ground, and when I'm going through the hardwoods, I just move right along, just at a regular walk. I'm not trying to necessarily be quiet and sneak and all that. But when I get in those corridors, I read the sign. If I'm seeing good sign and I'm around some signposts, or maybe there's a signpost and then I can see some other rubs, and I just poke my way down through. I take my time. I don't count so many steps and stop and wait so many minutes. I don't do that. I just kind of poke along easy, slow, look around. And then eventually you're going to get out of one of those places, and then I just pick up the pace and get to where it looks good again and slow down, and that's just the way I do it. You know?
Kind of a silly question, but do you hide behind the trees? Or, I mean, do you tippy-toe, do you actually sneak like a deer, or do you just kind of slow walk along and keep alert?
Well, it depends on the conditions, you know. If it's those cornflake leaves and stuff, you know, I try to do the best I can. Crusty snow, usually I'd be tracking even in the crust, but I try to walk like a deer, you know, when it's noisy, just take a few steps and stop, take a few steps, stop. And I only do that, like I said, when I'm in those good areas.
Mm-hmm.
But I got pretty good practice because I'm part of the geriatric crew, so I can sneak along pretty good by myself. If I got a deer hunter with me, a client, then it's
different.
Twice the noise and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Are most of your deer, the first tip-off you've got that you're near a deer, is it by sight or by sound?
It depends on the conditions. You know, if it's real quiet going, you know, like a damp, rainy day there, I'll usually get a look at them first, you know, or something. Or if it gets a little thicker, sometimes I can hear them, like if they stand up in their bed, I can hear that pum pum, kind of when their feet hit the ground, you know, and they just stand up. And there's, if I just hear that once, thump, thump, like that, I know they're standing there looking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then you got to stop and look around. I might bleed a little bit or just do something low, see if I can get them to move or something or take a step.
Yeah,
something like that.
One thing that always amazes me is how long a whitetail will stand motionless. Do you have any sense of how long, if they sense danger or they're trying to figure you out, do you have any sense of how long they're willing to just stand there motionless?
Yes, I do, because that's how I figured out in tracking how long to wait before I go after them once I jump them. Because 15 minutes doesn't work, so it's longer than that.
Is it?
So,
wow.
So I wait a half an hour. Every time I jump, not every time. When the first time I jump a buck, I just sit down and I wait a half an hour and eat a sandwich or something. And,
wow.
No kidding.
And then go after them. Because what they always do, and again, because the big woods bucks are different than farm country bucks or whatever, they don't know it's a person. They don't know what it was. They might have heard a stick snap.
Mm-hmm.
They might have saw a little movement, whatever it was. And all they were trying to do is get out of the way and see if something's chasing them, because we all know it's a coyote that's harassing them all year round.
Yep.
If they have any encounters with danger, it's most likely a coyote.
Okay.
So, and a coyote's going to run right after them, right?
Right.
So if they go off and wait, and they wait a half an hour or whatever, they just go about their business. They completely forget about what happened because they don't know what it was. Now, if you bumped right into one and it did know, it smelt you or got a good bead on you, then it's a little different. But usually it's not the case. Usually they just have jumped up and just to get out of the way because they heard a saw movement or heard something. So
yeah.
And then, so coincidentally, everybody thinks you're going to track a buck and shoot him in his bed or whatever when he first jumps up, and that's usually not going to be the case.
Yeah.
The second time is the best time.
Yeah. We're almost out of time here. I have one quick question I want to put to you. You're getting on in years like the rest of us. Do you still, when you get after a buck, do you still not worry or care about how far you are from the truck?
No, I don't care.
That's a difference between you and me and Norm. That's fantastic. Hey, we appreciate you. I could talk to you for 2 hours now. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us. I know you got a busy schedule there. And thanks so much for being with us. Best of luck in the deer woods this fall. And we look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
All right. Good luck to you, Hal. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was Hal Blood. The Big Woods buck hunter, and I'm a deer hunter, and I found that to be fascinating. Hope you did as well.
Great.
You did, Diane. Diane's a deer hunter. She enjoyed it. Next week, our guest will be Mark Cody, who's going to come on board and tell you about Anacostia Island's new deer hunts. And we'll see you all next week right here on Maine Outdoors.